ready.
Now back to Heatwave Sports.
Hour two of Heatwave Sports on a Sunday night, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. 876-1340 is the Heatwave hotline. Please jump on in if you have something to say. We had San Diego State fan call in earlier. And Tommy, we're going to turn the mic over to radio personality Chris Wynn, back on the show as always. Chris, Tom, Big Ten representative Chris Wynn here.
Yes, sir. Y'all fired up after, Go Green, Go White handled their business today against the Buckeyes of Ohio State. But always good to join you, Tim, Tommy, as well as DeMond on a Sunday night after an action-packed weekend of sports, you guys. Tommy, you got to be jealous that you weren't in Vegas this weekend, my friend. All kinds of stuff going down. College hoops tourneys all over the place. Rolling from the Thomas and Mac over to the Orleans. Then we had some baseball in town. You had the Cubbies and the Reds, Tommy. It is just a great time to be in Vegas. But not trying to disparage you over there on the right coast there, Tommy. But there was a lot going on in Vegas this weekend.
Vegas is my second favorite place on earth, so I'm always missing Vegas. Come on now, Chris.
I get you.
You don't have to rub it in. I'm always missing Vegas.
And, of course, with the Mountain West Championship game that went down on Saturday afternoon, we got even more college basketball, Tommy, because you're going to have the West Coast Conference, the semifinals, tomorrow night down at the Orleans, where you're going to have two of the better teams in the country with both BYU and, of course, you guys have been talking about Gonzaga on the show today. Both those teams in action in the semifinals and what could be a much-anticipated final in the West Coast Conference on Tuesday if you get a matchup of BYU and Gonzaga and just kind of a precursor to what March Madness could be all about come next week when Selection Sunday goes down.
BYU's got to be chomping at the bit, Chris. Mm-hmm. They haven't won a title in 19 years, and I've started to hear some of the chatter coming out that, you know, don't say it doesn't mean anything to us. Yeah, the NCAA tournament's big, but we haven't won a title in 19 years. It's rare you actually hear people that most of them weren't born, right, to feel this pain actually talking about it and saying, yeah, it's been 19 years. I expect that game to be an awesome, awesome game tomorrow.
Well, of course, also what makes it more interesting about that is that BYU has been making transitions from conference to conference, right? They haven't, you know, been a West Coast Conference traditional team. Now that they are in that conference, I mean, this is a BYU program, right, that you don't really necessarily think. Obviously, Dave Rose was a pretty solid coach there. They had some appearances. Everybody remembers Jimmer Fredette and what he was, you know, the kind of player he was when they were in the Mountain West Conference. But now, of course, making that transition where you're going up against the likes of St. Mary's, when you're going up against the likes of the Gonzagas and even some other teams in that conference, it makes it very interesting to see how it's going to play out with BYU. And as in context to what Tim and Tommy, you guys have been talking about as far as the NCAA tournament coming up, they're the 15th ranked team in the country, BYU, right now. So where does that put them? You've been talking about seedings. Where does that put them in the whole, you know, scope of could they make a dent deep into March Madness? Could they be one of those teams that could be shocking, right, Tommy? Because we all know about the teams that are going to be 2s, 3s, 4s, and obviously number one seeds. But is BYU one of those teams that could be, you know, a 5-9 seed that ends up making some noise come the big dance?
What? Well, Chris, the question comes to you then. What's making some noise? Because, listen, if you're a top 25 team in the country, you should be making the Sweet 16 or you know, damn well near it. What is making some noise? If you're telling me that you think BYU could go to the Elite Eight, I'm going, yeah, I don't think so. You want to tell me that you think they can go to the Sweet 16? I'm all in this. Yeah, absolutely, I think BYU could do that. But is that really, you know, making some noise? Is that really opening up eyes? I'm not sure. I don't know where the bar is for BYU on the grand scope. I don't think that a team that has had their kind of success is going to all of a sudden take people by surprise. I don't think that a Sweet 16 is enough for them, but I think that that's kind of their ceiling as well.
Well, you guys talked about, you know, going into the tournament and teams, it's not necessarily what they've done early on in the season or even midway. It's how they're playing on the back end. And you can make an argument. There's nobody in the country that's playing as well as BYU. You're on the back end of the season. This is a BYU team that just whacked Pepperdine. Obviously, they had the big win on February 22nd where they beat Gonzaga. Right, who at the time was I think they were number one or they're at least number two, obviously, in the country. They actually beat them pretty solidly. They beat them by 13 in that game. They have won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 straight on the back end of the season. So a lot of times when you talk about success in college basketball in March, it's about how well teams are playing on the back end of their regular season. And BYU is right there. And look, they're going to get tested. We'll see what happens tomorrow night in the semifinal.
Mine is 4 tomorrow against St. Mary's. I feel like I know where Chris Wynn's leaning.
Oh, you do. Yes, you are on point, Tommy, because I'm definitely at both of those. To be honest with you, as I look at both those games tomorrow night, and we'll be in attendance, I think I'm going to try to drag Tim over there for the semifinal games. I like both favorites, Tommy. I do. I like BYU to handle their business and pull that game out by more than 5 points. And I also I gotta say it. I mean, I absolutely like the favorite in the second game as well too. I just think that both teams handle their business. I think that you know, even though the line, I think is, I want to say it's 12.5 for the second game.
Yeah, it's up to 13 in some spots.
It's 13 in some spots.
I think it's a listen. It's just impossible to bet against Gonzaga, but that's more of a wait and see. But I'm on with you, man. I kind of like BYU. They just have so much to in front of them and so much to gain by winning this.
Let's stay in the West. Let's take a look at the Pac-12. Oregon will be the number one seed. They win the regular season title, 24 wins. UCLA under Mick Cronin, 19-12. They'll be the 2 seed. USC, Arizona State, Colorado, Arizona, Stanford. So those are the potential 7 teams that different various quote-unquote experts have making the Pac-12. Tom, where do you have the Pac-12 at as far as total number of teams?
You know, I used to be such a Pac-12 supporter. I just think that it's gone down to a point where it's hard to support them right now. You can say, hey, look, even their last 2 teams, Washington State, they got 15 wins. That's nice. It's in a bad conference. You got to, obviously, Oregon's going in. I think you have to look at USC and say 22 wins is going to be hard to keep them out. Arizona State, I think, is in. I really do. I think Arizona State's a team that's in. Now you got Colorado, Stanford, Arizona, UCLA. Guys, I don't see this getting 6, 7 teams in. I think they're going to settle for 5, and people are going to be upset. Who's going to be upset? I don't think you could keep out, a team like Arizona, even though Colorado has more wins. Colorado might be on the outside looking in. Stanford might be on the outside looking in. It could be a 6, maybe even a 7 bid conference. I don't see it because of how weak the conference is perceived to be. And even Oregon, who is one dominant team, they're the only team that really lived inside the top 25 all year. Where do you guys have? Do you have 5, 6, 7? Do you have more than I do? I'm going to say 5 get in, teetering on that 6.
I like 5 right now. Obviously, Oregon's a no-brainer right now at 13th in the country, but and then 22 wins. I like UCLA to get in. I like Arizona State to get in. I like Arizona to get in. And then one more team, I'm going to throw it in there, even though I think that it may be a stretch. I think USC gets in, too, as well. I think Colorado's
got 22 wins, right?
Chris? Yeah,
I mean, don't we have to?
Yeah, I think they gotta be. They gotta have a spot there. You bring up Colorado. Colorado is interesting because they're a team that is not playing well. They basically fell out of the top 25, and recently. I understand that the national rankings aren't something that are gonna end all be all when it comes to the NCAA tournament and how they handle things, but I think that is a team that is trending downward, and so that's why I have the Buffaloes on the outside looking in. So those are the teams I would have from the Pac-12 that I would have in the big dance.
Yeah, Colorado's lost 5 of their last 7 games to end the season. They're going to need a strong tournament to put the eyes back on them. And when you look at any of those teams, those guys, right? I'll even stay with the UCLA and USC's. Granted, USC is 22 wins. What if they get beat in the first round? That becomes a bubble situation, and you start getting pushed back. Arizona's not going to make it. Let's just put that out there. Arizona's not going to be there. They're in. Other than that, Oregon, obviously. I still say UCLA, USC go, and I think Arizona State. I think we're all in the same right there. Stanford, no, and I'm going to say Colorado, no.
And it's really tough pickings, isn't it, Tommy and Tim? Because you got all these teams have 20 wins. It seems like everybody's got 20 wins or is near 20 wins, and it's kind of a crapshoot. And if you kind of like you play the schedule game. And you started to look over everybody's schedule, and you know certain of those teams that we think that aren't getting the tournament have wins over quality squads during the season. But you're not going to have just a run. It's not as Tommy and Tim, you guys are talking about as far as the Big Ten, where in my opinion, Tommy, I think 10 teams do get in from the Big Ten. But it's a little bit different when you've got a run of 20 and 21 win teams
in
the Big Ten.
In there?
I do have Indiana in, yes. Indiana and
Rutgers. That's who it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Indiana I've heard a lot of Purdue the two teams. Backers, and I just don't get the Purdue love.
And look, maybe I'm giving a little too much credit to some other experts because I was watching with Joe Lenardi and some others who were talking about the Big Ten. And maybe there – and look, make no mistake about it. There is that Big Ten bias out there that there is with much like the ACC. And maybe even – and Tommy, maybe even the Big East to an extent. As far as a little bit of favoritism, a little bit of extra love going to those conferences, but to get back to the Pac-12, I just don't think they have that type, especially this year with all the parity around college basketball. That there's going to be just a run of teams that are at 20 wins in the Pac-12 that are just going to end up getting into the NCAA tournament.
Guys, I want to ask you. I know we're talking about the big boys here, Tim.
Yeah,
but. I want to ask you about some of these smaller teams that maybe the general public they're just overlooking. While everybody's drooling and tripping over themselves about San Diego State, what about Stephen F. Austin? And let me just give you the resume. 28-3 record, okay? First place in the Southland. You go, oh, okay, well, it's only the Southland. They went into Cameron Indoor and beat Duke this year. Let's not forget it, okay? They went out and they played tough against the Rutgers at the Rack. That was one of their losses. They lost at Alabama, and they lost a one-point game in conference. They have three losses on the season, and they beat Duke in North Carolina, guys. No one's talking about Stephen F. Austin. I'll make an argument right now that Stephen F. Austin is just as dangerous as they were just a couple of years ago when they turned heads.
I can see where you're going on this, Tommy, but we all know what happens with teams like this, like the Stephen F. Austins and the Loyola Chicagos. You know what they become victims of? They're victims of the seeding, right, when it comes to the NCAA tournament, because then you end up in matchups that are just disadvantageous to the teams, no matter how great you were. And, yes, they get they go on the road, and you get a win against a historic team.
Give them San Diego State in round one. I'm all over the Lumberjacks, maybe.
Yeah, but you understand what I'm saying, right, Tommy? As far as a lot of times, if you end up, being one of those great teams from a smaller conference where, you just absolutely boat race people all throughout the regular season, and then you get screwed between a 10 and a 13 or 14 seed in the NCAA tournament, it just ends up being a bad setup for you. And it's a bad scene.
Not often, I'm not disagreeing, but not often, Chris, do you have a team going into a top 10 ACC school and winning on the road.
100% true. And we saw that, right?
That might be the most impressive win of the year.
And we saw that, of course, with Kentucky when it was November. And Evansville went into Rupp Arena and knocked off the Wildcats. And correct me if I'm wrong. But Tim, was it you or Brian Feldman last night that like Kentucky? They like you like the Wildcats.
I love them.
And think they could be dangerous as far as not just getting to the Final Four, but winning the whole thing.
Well, you and I sat in a T-Mobile back during Coaches vs. Cancer when Utah knocked off Kentucky, and Calipari sat in the press conference and said, "Don't judge us now. Give my guys some time to judge. They're all this is a young team, and look what they've done. They dominated the SEC."
And look, you guys have pointed out,
Tim, I've called them the second most dangerous team in the country. And I didn't listen last night, unfortunately, guys. Mm-hmm. But I called them the second most dangerous team in the country. We're in the same like mind. Kentucky, they are that zone, lower the head and get dangerous at the right time kind of team.
And the first game of the season, of course, was that matchup with Kentucky and Michigan State in the State Farm Champions Classic back in November. That was the number one. And Michigan State, Kentucky, number one, number two teams in the country.
Yep.
And we saw how it shook out as far as the rankings all season long with all this seesawing effect going back and forth and teams that were number one moving out of the top 10 and some moving out of the top 25 altogether. That were ranked in the, and I'm talking about Michigan State, obviously, moving out of that. So I guess the point I'm trying to get at is, Tommy, absolutely validity to what you're saying as far as some of these. Hey, and I think it's fair and not disrespectful to say that they're, you know, mid majors to lower mid major conferences, right? These teams represent, and these teams aren't picked to get to the Final Four, and when they do, it's miraculous, right? And when you do see teams make it to the Final Four that historically have no chance, you would think, make it, it's a big story. But you also have to take a look at it as from the standpoint, and I think, Tommy, you pointed this out and it many times. When's the last time a team that is not in a Power 5 conference has won a national championship? And, of course, being here in Las Vegas, we all know the answer to that. And
that's the only time since 1967.
Yes. So when it's all said and done, right, guys, it ends up coming down to the likes of the Kansases and the Dukes and the Marylands and the Michigan States and the Kentuckys. And, the, you know, it ends up being those. Now, look, I think we have to acknowledge there's been chances. There's been times where teams have been there. There's been the Butlers, right? There's been the University of Cincinnati's with Nick Van Exel. There's been the, you know, there's been spots where certain teams from other conferences that aren't the Pac-12, the Big Ten, the ACC, the Big East, and they've been on the doorstep, but they haven't been able to actually close the deal and knock out that national championship. So I think
Gonzaga.
Gonzaga, another one. Mm-hmm. But Tommy, it brings up a great point, Tommy. Could this be the year that one of those mid-majors or conferences other than mid-majors? You guys, before I came on, we're talking about the Dayton Flyers. Dayton, one of the best teams in the country this year. That which is, you know, when that comes out of my mouth, I'm just flabbergasted. I'm amazed that I'm saying that the University of Dayton is a top five team in America. It's an indication of the parity in college basketball, right, guys, this year. And the fact that you can make a case from a handicapper standpoint like Tommy's, or from just, you know, a college basketball analyst viewpoint, or just sports talk radio guys, you can make a case for what, 10, 12, 15 teams in America that could win a national championship this year. So, Tommy, could it be the year that one of these teams actually pulls it off and ends up cutting down the nets in 2020?
I don't think so.
I just don't. It's gonna be one of the blue blooders, isn't it, Tommy? It's gonna be the Big East team.
When I'm breaking down my numbers, I'm going, man, I could see. Look, Florida State has never won either. I think Florida State in there. Man, Louisville's good. Duke's good. If you go to the Big Ten, you still got Michigan State's in danger. Kentucky, mm-hmm. we just mentioned. The Big East has three teams. If this was a year where there was a few, I don't think Dayton. Look, you put Dayton head to head in a matchup with even a Creighton, who's not even the best team in the Big East. With a Creighton, you put them head. They're just at a disadvantage. Gonzaga's the only player is Gonzaga, and unfortunately, I've seen this movie before, and I've seen how it plays out before. I like Gonzaga. I liked Gonzaga before it was cool to like Gonzaga. Okay, 20 mm-hmm. years ago, when Gonzaga went to the we actually called the school to try to get somebody on, and we got the answer machine. We called security to ask them if they were partying on campus. They didn't know a basketball game was going on. This is a true story.
Yeah.
So, unlike Gonzaga, before Gonzaga was Gonzaga, but I've also, you know, haven't we gone through this before? Haven't we seen teams that Art Few has that are just dominating and gassing people, and they're going to get all the way there, and then they get into the Final Four, and you go up against a perfect opponent like Kentucky, and they just have a little bit more than you. So I think Gonzaga's your only prayer. I like Dayton Sula. San Diego State's a fraud and a joke. Let's put them out of the way. All the other mid-majors there. But it's Gonzaga against everybody else. And when everybody else has the numbers and the coaching and the experience, I got to go with the everybody else's.
I got to tell you, though, as someone who loves college basketball and loves a good story about college basketball, I'm going to be pumped, Tim and Tommy, if the likes of Gonzaga, if the Dayton Flyers, if San Diego State, if Seton Hall, if Creighton, if teams like those end up cutting down the nets come the end of the big dance, I'm going to be kind of pumped. And look, this is a guy talking.
You know who's not going to be, Chris?
Who?
Executives that have Gonzaga against
Exactly. Yeah, the Final Four matchup's not exactly going to be conducive to great TV viewership. You think that's going to be the deal?
I saved the ACC for Tom because of the San Diego State tie-in that we had with the show across the hallway, the Cofield show.
And I haven't been on the show yet with Tommy since that whole thing went down, where we had some local host in our town decided to make a mention of Mr. Barton.
They called him out,
basically.
So other than FSU, Duke.
Well, they didn't call me out because they would never actually call me out because I would have proven them wrong with backing and statistics and numbers. And I went to experts. I went to Dave Sharapin and CG Technology, and I said, what would the line be on the worst team in the ACC at the moment with UNC against San Diego State? So I have the proof. That's why they would never put me on the air, because I'd make them look silly.
Yeah.
And by the way, today, they look silly for doing that because everything I said was right.
So other than FSU, Duke, Louisville, Virginia, those are the for sures, right? The four. How many other schools from the ACC make this field, Tom?
You know, I don't know. It's down here in the ACC. It really is. We've had times when I've sat here and argued 11 teams should get in, right? I'm not sure. You got the four of the big boys. Barring, of course, somebody like North Carolina winning the ACC tournament, which, by the way, they might. But barring that, really the only competition you have is going to be Notre Dame and NC State. Georgia Tech's not doing it. Syracuse isn't going to get in, again, unless they go crazy in the ACC tournament. But I'm where it stands. Notre Dame will be a 20-win team if they win the first-round game. NC State will be a 20-win team if they win their first-round game. I think a 20-win team from the ACC gets in. But where we were just talking about getting 9 teams from the Big Ten in, maybe 7 teams from the Pac-12, 5 to 7 from there, 5 to 7 from the Big East, you're going, well, where are they going to pull it from? I think they pull from the ACC. Before the year begins, you automatically just put in, right? I mean, when you're doing the ACC, you put in 8, 9 teams. I mean, just every year. This year, I see 6.
You know the NCAA Tournament Committee is, and you know, college basketball's fans across the board want Florida State, Virginia, Louisville, or Duke to win the ACC tournament. Because you know what's going to happen if Georgia Tech or NC State or Syracuse or Notre Dame Clemson wins the ACC tournament.
If North Carolina wins, becomes the best story this year.
That would be nuts if the Tar Heels would be able to, you know, go from the cellar of the ACC to winning the tournament. It would just shake things up, and it would, you know, it'd be another classic storyline of one of those one team that was on the bubble, right, from some other conference, getting bounced out of the tournament because of something crazy like that.
I'm not putting it past them, guys. They've won 3 of the last 4. They're healthy now. They put up a good fight against Duke in Duke last time out. I see them beating Virginia Tech in round 1. I'm looking at the Tar Heels, and I'm going, look, they're not winning it, but, man, I kind of hope that they do just to get that storyline of, oh, my goodness, here we go.
So if you're talking about North Carolina, then Tommy, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility, right, that some of these middle-of-the-road teams could be dangerous in the ACC tournament, right? I mean, it's not crazy to think Clemson or even a Miami. Basically these 500 teams.
Oh, Miami's bad. Miami plays no defense, man. I thought Notre Dame for a while could get hot. I'm not afraid of these middle teams. They're not bad. Well, I've watched every single game Florida State's played this year. I've watched everything but 2 Virginia games, and I've watched almost every Louisville game this year. And what I see out of them, and not even mentioning Duke, by the way, what I see out of them are just teams that are national championship teams. Florida State, if they weren't Florida State, who, oh, by the way, if you're a Florida State baseball fan, you know what I mean by being Florida State. Mm-hmm. Florida State being Florida State, I can't say they're going to win the championship, but it's hard to find a hole in their game to get to the Final Four. I still, before the year began, I had Louisville taking on Seton Hall in the final. I still kind of like my Louisville ticket. There are times when they have lapses. And Virginia, how do you go against what Tony Bennett's doing now? We talked about it earlier, me and Tim, and I said they just don't have the offense to go far. But it wouldn't shock me to see them in the Final Four. It wouldn't. It really wouldn't shock me to see the ACC having a good year this year. But I don't see a champion out of them. I'm not ripping up my Louisville ticket. I'm not saying Duke can't do it. And Florida State's Florida State. I just don't see the champion coming out of the ACC this year.
You take a look at this team, this conference, Tommy. What do you think Florida State gets seeded if they have a, you know, if they at least have a half decent showing in the ACC tournament where they make at least the semifinal? Where do you think the Seminoles end up getting seeded?
They should be the number one seed. They are the second best team in the country. I mean, wow. I don't. That's not favoritism. That is strictly you go 26-5 and win the regular season ACC title.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be a number one seed. Now, again, that's a regular season title. What are they doing this? If they go out, and we were talking about this, if they go out and win the ACC championship and the regular, they have to be a one. I mean, you just have to put them as a one. The question is, when do they lose the ACC championship tournament? Yeah. If they lose in the finals, I don't know if they have enough to be a one seed. So I have them firmly at two, but if they win the tournament, they are easily a number one seed, and they may be ranked number three overall after Kansas and Gonzaga.
That's Tom Barton, TomBartonSports.com. Tim Unglesby, Chris Wynn here in the Lotus Broadcast Studios. Selection Sunday. Well, next Sunday we'll be talking about the matchups and the way the brackets play themselves out. After the timeout, though, the boys want to talk a little Major League Baseball as we're 17 days away from opening day. We will talk about the news and notes around Major League Baseball on the other side of the timeout. It's Heatwave Sports on a Sunday night, Fox Sports Radio, Las Vegas.
Spring training begins in 2 weeks. Here's a list of the players we'll be inviting to camp.
I never heard of half of these guys, and the ones I do know are way past their prime.
Most of these guys never had a prime.
This guy here is dead.
Cross him off, then.
This is Heatwave Sports. Here's Tom Barton and Tim Unglesby.
Cross him off, Chris.
California Penal League.
Spring training. Yeah, rearing away. Guys, 17 days away from opening day. Tom, we need to talk some baseball. I know we're going to do the preview show in a couple weeks, give our predictions. And if you've been following them, which most of you should, we've actually been correct the last couple years, Tommy, on World Series champions.
Yeah, it's been last year, Washington. I think I came on here and told you I was damn near ready to rip up my ticket. And you might have talked me down from the ledge, right? I had the Nationals again before the Eagles. Again, I said, yeah, right about like May. I said, Tim, they're kind of, if it wasn't for the Marlins, they're the worst team in baseball. I was like, huh? Don't rip up your ticket yet. You are sitting pretty at the end.
Mm-hmm. Talk about what's going on in spring training right now. We'll start with the Yankees, the favorites to win the World Series. They're battling the injury bug, Tom. We haven't even started yet.
Yeah, you say some like when Chris said, you know, Tommy, do you miss Vegas? Yeah, all right, some. Sure. It's devastating, man. It really is, and it is funny. All offseason, it was the conversation, why didn't you trade J-Hap? What are we going to do with trading Miguel Andujar? Get rid of Clint Frazier, right? Put him on the block while he's got some time. Well, right now, J-Hap is like your number three starter. Miguel Andujar is going to be an outfielder, and Clint Frazier is going to be a starter. Stanton's banged up. Judge is banged up. Severino, we know his problems. Paxton's banged up. The good thing is this. This is going to sound like the most arrogant Yankee conversation, but it's reality here, guys. None of it matters as long as they're okay for October. Because the Yankees can roll out these random guys like we see constantly, all the time, through the history of the Yankees last
25 years. Roll out random guys, get the wins, get into the playoffs, and it only matters if they're healthy then. I think they're being overly cautious with Aaron Judge, but it is concerning they don't know what's going on. I think they're being a little overcautious with Giancarlo Stanton, but I'm okay with it. They clearly were overcautious with Severino, and look at what that happened. So it has to be at this point. James Paxton, all the reports are that he's coming back and he's going to be good. This could all be a blessing in disguise, and maybe I'm looking at this on the bright side. Clint Frazier has little to no value right now. He's going to get at least a couple of weeks to start. This guy can hit, man, and his draft value, or I'm sorry, his trade value is just going to go up. He's an unnecessary piece right now. Miguel Andujar, if he could prove that he could play the outfield, well, that gives him flexibility. I still expect that the Yankees are going to be wheeling and dealing, and they might be the team. But I will tell you what, with the Yankees and their injury problems, the Red Sox and Chris Sale and all that's going on there, losing Sale, losing David Price, losing Mookie Betts, the team that I was scared of last October is the team I'm terrified of now, and that's Tampa Bay. I would go on a ledge here and say, because there is no Cole with Verlander, because Scherzer's another year older, they might have the best 1-2-3 in baseball. They potentially have that. You got Blake Snell, bad year last year, but we know what he could do. Charlie Morton's been fantastic, fantastic renovation in the last couple of years. And Tyler Glasnow has some of the best stuff in baseball. The Rays scare me as a Yankee fan.
We talked about the narrative, of course, Tommy, with the Yankees and the injury situation and, what, 30 guys on the injured list last year. But it's one thing, Tommy, when you have a team that has guys who are veterans, right? Guys who are in their mid-30s, late-30s, maybe get on the injured list. But I want to get your thoughts on Gary Sanchez, because you're talking with Gary, we're talking about a guy who's in his prime, right? 27 years old, someone who is going to be an anchor of this team moving forward. And we have reports coming from ESPN where he's dealing with a lower back soreness that is something that is projected to be day-to-day. But look, I get it, Tommy. It's spring training. But to have a young guy like that, who's going to be a cornerstone of your lineup dealing with injuries in spring training, it has to be cause for not alarm, but at least for some concern.
Chris, I'm a boater. Okay, I like to go boating. I like to go down to Key West. You know it, right? Green Parrot.
Oh, yeah.
Roll up and go out.
It's my spot.
You just called Aaron Sanchez an anchor. What does an anchor do? What do they do? They sink.
Yes.
Then you called him a cornerstone. Yeah, what does a stone do? It sinks. Gary Sanchez is a sinking ship. He will sink the Yankees. I don't mind that he is hurt. Listen, he's got a powerful bat. I don't know if you watched the spring training game the other day. He was booed. Listen to this. He was booed in a spring training game because he had three pass balls. He was booed on defense in a spring training game. Mm-hmm. That's where Gary Sanchez sits to me. Maybe I'm in the minority of Yankee fans are clearly not. They're booing him at spring training. I'm not telling you I don't want him on the team because his bat is powerful, but I think it's overstating it. And I'm not jumping on you. It's just the overall prevail.
Right.
He's not a leader. He's not somebody that is a make or break. If we get 85, 90 games out of him, that's healthy. Hey, good, tip your cap. But sometimes he's more of a liability. He is someone that I want healthy, but if he's not healthy, Chris, oh, well, we'll be fine.
What about the Houston asterisk, Tommy? How's the season going to be for Houston?
It's going to be bad. It's going to be really, really bad. I know Madoff Russo is saying he thinks this is going to inspire them. I'm sorry, I don't think so. And I'm not even talking about getting hit all the time, okay? The getting hit thing is one thing. It's just that constant mental dread. It's the always question mark and the worry. And, you know, a guy like Altuve may be able to handle it. And Bregman, who's just a piece of garbage anyway, these guys might be able to handle it. But what about a guy like Kyle Tucker, right? Is he going to be able to handle this? Is Jordan Alvarez going to be able to handle it? Now, all of a sudden, you have a guy like Osuna that is, you know, beats his wife, beats women, and he's cheating. Like, is he going to be able to handle the Bluebirds? I don't know. I think that guys like, you know, the superstars will be able to handle it, but the rest of the team – it's a crunch, man. It is a weight on your shoulders, the manager weight on the shoulders, the organizational weight on your shoulders. And they might come out of the box. And I think the first month of the season, it's a bet on the Astros. They got to come out. Oh, we got to prove to everybody we're. And then it's going to sink in. We don't have Gerrit Cole anymore. We are really kind of dragging here. It's annoying to go to every stadium and just be booed like this and mocked like this. I think the Astros are going to have a rough year. But, again, rough by their standards still means the playoffs.
Another team that has been intriguing here in the offseason, you mentioned Chris Sale with the Red Sox, and that, a guy that was a big part of that trade with the White Sox, of course, was Michael Kopech. And he's set to make his Cactus League debut on Tuesday. He's going to on Tuesday. He had Tommy John surgery back in 2018. This was a highly touted prospect for the White Sox. This is a White Sox team that's got some young arms and that could end up making some noise, not just in the American League Central, but also in the American League this year. What do you think about the White Sox's chances and the prospects that they could be one of the teams to look out for in the American League?
I think I'm the only one that's not all over this White Sox bandwagon. I was interviewed from the Chicago Sun-Times this week asking me about the White Sox and the Cubs, what my opinion was on both of them. And there's a prop play out there. I think it was an 8-1 odds to the Cubs and the White Sox both in the playoffs. And I said, I'd rather have the odds on either one of them making the playoffs because I don't think either one of them do. It's a big leap to take. I think they're a year away. Can they win? Look, they're in a terrible division. Can they win 84, 85 games? Sure. But I don't think they are ready yet. Lucas Giolito is their ace. To me, he's not an ace. He's just their number one. And, oh, by the way, coming off of an injury. Dallas Keuchel winds up as their number two. I think we all understand Dallas Keuchel is not what he once was. You got Lopez in that rotation, maybe a Dylan Cease. You got guys that have question marks all over. And then you go around the diamond. And it's the same kind of stuff. We all see incredible bat speed from Eloy Jimenez, but I haven't seen him do it on 162 games. You know, I have to see it to believe it. I think they have a lot of talent. I think they are 2 years away. If we're talking about 2021, I'm going, yeah, I like the White Sox. But it takes teams time to progress. This is the year that they battle for a wild card, maybe battle for a division, potentially make the playoffs. But I don't see big things out of them, and I'm seeing people getting a little crazy. They've got a lot of futures money to win the World Series, and I think that's just crazy.
Isn't that division, though, it's just the land of the slept-on teams, right? Because nobody is talking about teams like the Minnesota Twins. Nobody's really talking about the teams like the Cleveland Indians. So, I mean, is this just a natural situation that we have with baseballs where, you know, you kind of look at this division and you say, you know, they got some decent teams over there, but when it comes to the nuts and bolts, the nitty-gritty of October and late September, nobody's going to be really scared when we look at, you know, the likes of the Indians or the Minnesota Twins when it comes to the American League playoff race.
You know, I think that's a good analogy for it. Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it. It also helps that the fact that was it Cleveland last year that went something like 18-1 against the Tigers, against your Tigers,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was the Indians, yeah.
You know, and people look at it and you go, well, you've got two teams that just can't get out of their own way. Kansas City and Detroit can't get out of their own way.
Right.
So they'll have inflated records and it's a pumped up schedule and about the Mountain West of baseball, right? I mean,
yeah.
What are we talking about here? So, a little bit of that. I'm afraid of the Twins. As a Yankee fan, I'm not afraid of Cleveland just because they've had so many injuries, and I think they're going to sell. But I am afraid of the Twins. I think the Twins can slug their way out of a short series. But am I nervous? No. I'm afraid of them, but I'm not nervous, and there is that difference.
Right over in the National League, obviously, you have the Dodgers, everybody's favorite, 7 straight NL West titles. They played in 2 of the last 3 World Series, would have come up short in both those. And we acknowledge the asterisk, right, Tom? But what about the Dodgers? You go out and get bets, you pick up Price. They're loaded for bear always in the regular season. The problem is when it comes to the postseason. How do you see that changing this year, if anything?
You know, I don't think it does change. I think they still have some problems. and their problems this year, a lot of the problems. I expect Blake Treinen to come back and actually be better and give them a little stability there. But they also did that with Joe Kelly last year, and he wasn't exactly what they thought. Kenry Jansen, I think he's going to bounce back. I've read that he's doing a lot more splitter work. He is developing a pitch. He actually is up a tick and a half on his fastball. That's good after losing a mile or more on his fastball each of the last 3 years. But the back end of the bullpen is a problem. Plus, the idea that the Dodgers are going to be another one of these teams. I hate to bring the basketball reference up, but Tim, they're not going to be tested all year. They're going to win this division for like 15 games. They're going to run away with it. They're not going to be tested. And getting into the playoffs, all of a sudden, you're going to be going up against good teams. Arizona doesn't have pitching to test them. San Diego has a couple of nice arms, but come September, October, those guys are going to hit those innings a little bit. Chris Paddock isn't pitching 200 innings this year. Then you go into San Francisco. They have nobody. Colorado, well, they don't pitch. So their hitters, no, they're going to have massive numbers. But just like Cody Bellinger last year, and I'm a Cody Bellinger fan, guys, but just like Cody Bellinger last year, all of a sudden he went up against elite playoff pitching, and the guy couldn't hit his way out of a paper bag because he hasn't seen it in a while. So getting the weak division with no pitching in it, well, that'll propel you to a 15, maybe 20-game win, and you're going to cruise to a division title. But when you come to the playoffs and all of a sudden you're facing Strasburg and Scherzer and Corbin and all these guys, now all of a sudden it looks a little bit different. The game changes. And I think the same problem is going to be for the Dodgers.
We talked, of course, about the Chicago White Sox. Let's head to the north side of the Windy City and talk about the Chicago Cubs. I had a chance to head out there today, Tommy, to check out Chicago taking on a Cincinnati Reds team, interdivision battle. And they're surprisingly, you think spring training, right? You think, you're not going to see a lot of the stars. A lot of the guys that are going to be in the opening day lineup were out there for the Chicago Cubs. This is a Cubs team, Tommy, but had their four-year playoff run end in 2019. They end up with 84-78 on the season. Of course, everybody remembers that they finally win their first World Series title in what seems like a gazillion years back in 2015-16. But this is a Cubs team that in the pitching department, they've got some quality pieces. But I think from an offensive standpoint, that's what's going to be a lot of fun to see if the Cubs can continue to score runs and be an effective offensive club, right, for them to be successful come here in 2020.
Yeah, the Cubs to me are uninspiring. They're an 84-85 win team. Is that good enough to get them in? Maybe. Yeah. You know, what do the Cubs do to improve themselves? They got Craig Kimbrell, who I got all kinds of question marks about. Got Cole Hamill, sitting on the bench because he's banged up and he's like 102 years old. Javier Baez will never be as good as he was that one season. They lost some pieces. I don't think that the Cubs necessarily got worse. I'm pretty sure that they didn't get better. And I feel like Cincinnati did get better. And I think St. Louis might have gotten a little bit better. And I think Pittsburgh might be a little bit better this year. And Milwaukee probably takes a little step back, but my point is that I think the Cubs are treading water. And they got 84 wins last year. If you told me, they're going to win 84 wins again, that's about right. I think they're the same team that they were last year. And guess what? That just wasn't good enough.
And we'll also see, in my opinion, what it means as far as a manager's influence, right? Because, Joe Madden, no longer the manager there. David Ross takes over, obviously the former player that was on that World Series winning team with the Cubs. We're going to see exactly, what kind of an impact managers can have in Major League Baseball.
Guys, how worried are you about Craig Kimbrell? Because he did not look good last year. He comes out, I know it's only spring training. Mm-hmm. He hasn't looked good in spring training. Looked bad today. He's lost miles per hour on his fastball. And here's the problem. Behind him, they got rid of Carl Edwards. I know he didn't have a good year. Behind him, you have Rowan Wick. Rowan Wick is literally the next in line to close. That bullpen is bad. And you got Craig Kimbrell, who they signed to a long-term deal. It's not going to shock me to watch Craig Kimbrell go out there and, save 35 games this year. But it wouldn't shock me if he's removed from the closer's role either. And this could go south really fast, really badly for the Cubs, who their bullpen is all kinds of issues. The only stability one, Craig Kimbrell, I'm not feeling good about him.
Well, you're going to need the likes of Lexter, Hendricks, obviously, and you to pitch great, right? Otherwise, it's a it could be a long, long season if you're relying on the guys coming out of the bullpen to be stopgaps in what could be very difficult situations from a pitching standpoint.
Rowan Wicks scaring everyone.
Rowan Wicks.
No, it doesn't at all. But, Tommy, you did mention, too, the acquisitions that the Cubs made. Not exactly, lighten up a lot of people's interest when you pick up the likes of Jeremy Jeffries, you add Hernan Perez and Steven Souza to this Chicago Cubs team. Not exactly huge names. Although I did see Jason Kipnis out there today. Kipnis is going to be competing for that second baseman job there in Chicago. Obviously, he's somebody that we're aware of. But to your point, not exactly a lot of high-profile free agents came into the north side this year that Cubs fans are getting excited about.
What about Atlanta, Tommy? When you look at the batting order, and you look at bats like Freeman, Ozuna now a Brave, Acuna of course, and you add in CRT, Albies now another year older. I like the bats a lot. When I look at the bullpen, and this is the problem with Atlanta, is we've been waiting for them to mature as a team. Again, it's going to come down to the pitching in this division. Soroka, Max Fried, Cole Hamels, who they picked up in the offseason. And then, your guess is as good as mine the rest of the way. Why didn't Atlanta go out and do a better job of finding an arm?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not even that they don't have quality arms. It's that no one's given them 200 innings, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just think, honestly, Tim, it's not out there. I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to pay Dallas Keuchel that money? Are you going to go and give it to Gio Gonzalez? I mean, the arm just wasn't there. After Gerrit Cole, they're just not in a position to go out there and just say, oh, we're going to go spending crazy. You saw them let Josh Donaldson walk. Well, they let Josh Donaldson walk. They replaced him with Marcell Ozuna. I think that's fine. And what arm did you want him to go get? I really just don't think that there was a guy to go and target.
Maybe you get something out of Felix Hernandez, right? You sign him to a minor league deal. Is there anything left in the tank there with a guy like that? And you look at, obviously, Tim mentioned, of course, the signing of Ozuna, but they also signed Travis d'Arnaud as well, too, they're going to look for him to kind of help with the loss of offense, obviously with the loss of Josh Donaldson. But the pitching staff, to me, is the biggest question. This is a pitching staff, it was seventh in Major League Baseball last year. It was a decent staff, and offensively, they're going to look to build on what they were able to do in 2019. This is an offensive team that really put them on the map as far as a team that was in the conversation to maybe make it to the World Series because of their offense. But that pitching staff, Tommy, as I'm sure you can acknowledge, is going to be the real difference maker, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's not even that they can't perform well. It's the innings, Chris. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm worried about. Yeah, Soroka and Hamels and all. You get into the – even Felix Hernandez. You think any of them are pitching 190 or 200? I just don't.
Well, you look at those –
look at that wall.
You mentioned Soroka, but they've also got Max. They got Max Fried. They got Newcomb. They've got some young guys too that they're looking that could end up shuttling back and forth between AAA and the majors. And Kyle Wright and Bryce Wright and Toussaint and Ian Anderson, guys like that. So their bullpen has a lot of guys that have arms with closing experience. But if you're rotating closers, we all know what that means. That means you don't have a real closer, right? So you're like trying out a lot of guys, and you're just hoping one of them sticks and ends up being someone that can take you the distance at that position.
I like the bullpen and the names. Mm-hmm. I like O'Day.
Yeah, I think I do. Will Smith is so underrated,
yeah.
Isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Luke Jackson is a solid setup guy. And then you got Shane Green and Mark Melanson in the back end. And either one of those guys, like you said, Chris, can close it.
Yep.
Maybe they're thinking that when they reach that limit, Tommy, if they're not going to grab somebody at a deadline deal and they have these guys coming up on innings, they're going to have to shorten the game like we've seen over the years and hope that the bullpen stays healthy.
Yeah, and they got a good bullpen. It's going to be a lot of managing, a lot of mix and matching. The problem is, I think that they're going to be better than they were last year. I definitely think Philly's going to be better than they were last year. And Washington's not going away. It's just a tough division to hope and mix and match, and especially that pitching in that division. If they were in the Dodgers division, they'd be in that division. Every day you're going up against them. DeGrom or Scherzer or Corbin or Strasburg, and Aaron Nola, the matchups are just tremendous in that division.
Opening day, Thursday, March 26th. So we'll do the preview show that weekend before right here on Heatwave Sports. Tom, let everybody know about Sports Garden Network and TomBartonSports.com.
Yeah, you guys can go check it out. It's TomBartonSports.com, everybody. This is the time to get involved. If you sign up today, you will get every single NCAA game right through the championship. You're going to get that, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, everything I do. No commission, no upgrades, no extra fees. It is TomBartonSports.com.
Tommy, have a good little nap. Enjoy your week, and we will talk to you next weekend.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
All right,
see you
Tommy.
Later, Chris.
Yes, sir.
Tom Barton, TomBartonSports.com. Check out Sports Garden Network. Tommy does a show Monday through Friday over there at Sports Garden Network. Chris, when we come back, hour three, I want to talk VGK.
Yes.
You have to come up with something to talk about in hour three.
I can do that.
And we'll go around the horn and figure this out. But
talk some NBA, maybe?
We can do that.
Maybe talk the association.
We can do that.
Big matchup today. Los Angeles, the Battle of L.A.
Battle of L.A.
Yes.
I really want to get into, on the way back, though, this quote-unquote no controversy regarding the Vegas Golden Knights.
I can't wait.
Get your thoughts on that. Brewing. It's brewing. I can feel it percolating, yes, here in town. Hour three on the way. Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio.